Chapter 8. The dark desert seemed to swallow us whole, and a freezing wind rushed out over the desolate landscape. The air hit me like a wall, and I held my coat a little tighter around me as I pushed forward. I wanted to get to Valestia as soon as possible so we could get the supplies and return to Granum, but eventually I'd have to pull the caravan off to the side and bed down for the night. By morning the weather would be very different, and all of us would shed off our heavy coats and bask in the hot sun. But for now, I needed to keep myself wrapped up tightly in my coat and scarf. Edeni had crawled through the window behind me and gone to bed, but not before giving me instructions on how to get to the mining city. The Duchess said that the road we were on was a straight shot to Valestia, and if we kept on it, we should be there within a day or two. I wanted to minimize our travel time and get there maybe within a day and a half. We needed Valestia's ore and iron desperately, and if we didn't get it, we couldn't conquer Granum. For the first time in a while, I was left alone with my thoughts, and I gazed out over the vast desert with plans for the future rolling around in the expanse of my brain. Granum had to be the largest city we'd taken on yet, but I knew that there would be others in the future that would be more difficult than this. For a moment, I thought we weren't ready to take on all of this, that I should have waited a bit longer and enlarged my army through other means. But I couldn't let the men of this country suffer for any longer. They'd already been through so much, and I was the only one who had the ability to free them. It had to be now, or it would never happen. What kind of lives would they live after they were freed? What would I have done if I'd been born with the freedom to do whatever I wanted? I chuckled lightly and shook my head with the reins held loosely in my hands. I probably would be doing what I'd done all of those years. As a child, I dreamed about becoming a practiced and accomplished doctor with experience in science. If the world were different, I would have probably been living in the capital, treating men and women for diseases and sicknesses. Though, if it had been like that, I wouldn't have become an alchemist or created my monster women. Would I have even discovered that I was the first man to develop powers? I highly doubted it. That thought brought up a few more questions that I didn't have the answers to. Was I the only man in the world to have powers? They may have been minimal and only usable with certain actions, but was I really the only one? Not only that, but how did I come to develop them? Were they passed down to me by my mother, or was it some sort of freak mutation? I wanted to learn more about it and know where it came from, but there was no way for me to find out. Sure, Edeni had offered to help me search Granum's records for my birth certificate or any other paperwork about where I came from. Still, since the city was so close to Edenheart, I wasn't sure if it'd even have any records about me in them. Who could be my mother? Who had given birth to me and then ultimately gave me up into the arms of the horrid schoolmarms? I'm sure that whoever she hadn't spent a moment of her life worrying or caring about me. But for some odd reason, I wanted to know, maybe even find her, see her face just once and take in all of the resemblances between us. I knew it was probably impossible to find my father, too, since he was probably only some random consort, so the urgency to find him wasn't as important, if it was even possible at all. There were questions that I wanted to ask my birth giver, but I already knew all of the answers since I'd heard them so many other times from aristocrats. Why did you give me up?
I didn't want you.
Why didn't you care about me? Was I your son?
You were a boy, and you're useless to me. Why would I ever keep an abomination like you?
The words didn't hurt me because I was desensitized to them. But if we found my mother and we transformed her, would she take on that motherly role I'd always longed for, or would she be a completely different person? Of course she wouldn't love me in the way that my women did, but what would it be like to have a mother after all these years? I read ancient books from before women took on their aristocratic roles, and how they lived with all of their children in one house. It seemed so alien to me. What would it have been like growing up in a household with not only a father, but a mother too? Would I have had siblings? I probably had a handful of brothers out there in the world, and I wondered if, after all this was finished, I could find them and bring them into my court. I already knew it was difficult for women to conceive because of current medicine, and if they did conceive, they didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl until they actually gave birth.
"What a strange world we live in," I whispered, and my breath lifted into the air in a heavy cloud of condensation. I rarely bothered myself with how the aristocrats thought or felt, but I wondered what it must have felt like to be pregnant for 9 months, fully prepared to have a healthy heir, and then it came out as a boy. How disappointed were they? Edeny had told me that she tried multiple times to conceive children, and only one lived past after it was born. I grieved for my wolf woman, but I knew that the child had been a boy, and she would have sent it away as soon as it parted from her body. Ryan was pregnant now. Would she have a boy or a girl? Well, it didn't matter to me either way, though. The only thing I cared about was if the child was healthy. That was the difference between the aristocrats and me. I brought new life into this world with my machine, and now those lives were giving me the beautiful opportunity of having children with them. All men deserve that same right, and I would give that to them as soon as I was king. My women begged me for babies, and I listened to their pleas with understanding ears. I would give them what they wanted, and soon I'd have a handful of children running around. Those thoughts brought me back to Ryan. She'd only been pregnant a few weeks now, and she was just starting to show. I was sure that by the time we took over Granum and moved on to the next city, she'd be about ready to give birth since Imps had such a high gestation rate. Before long, we'd be traveling all across the country with a child in tow, but I wasn't afraid. From what the black-haired beauty told me, Imps grew quickly, and before we reached the capital, I'm sure we'd have a child that looked around the age of 9 or 10, maybe even older if they grew faster than I expected. Hell, by the time we reached the queen, I guess that most of my women would be pregnant and ready to give birth. All of this seemed so fast. It felt like weeks ago I'd created Valerie by accident and introduced her to the blossoming world around us. But I knew that wasn't true. I'd created the feline woman at the beginning of summer, and now we were deep in the throes of autumn. Over the course of those months, I'd transformed Daisy, Ryan, Cleia, Josephine, Edeny, and Cecilia. It felt so strange to think about. My life had been so different when I moved into the manor and started working for the Duchess. She'd been in love with me, but I had no idea. But she still treated me terribly. The crook of my shoulder burned with the memory of her wicked, hooked cane coming down on it and forcing me to the ground. The Duchess still sometimes carried the weapon, and though I'd let go of all those horrible feelings and memories, it still brought up a feeling of uncertainty within me. I wondered how many more men had felt the bite of the pointed wood, or worse. I'd heard horror stories of things she'd do with that cane, though I could never be sure if all of them were true. I cleared my throat, shook my head, and adjusted my shoulders as I brushed off all of those thoughts and memories. Edeny was a completely different person, and she'd never think of doing something like that ever again except for maybe to an aristocrat. That was something I would have paid to see and would enjoy watching from afar. So many times I'd watched her take out her anger and rage on the men around her, and I was ready to see her do it to the people who really deserved it. Edeny. I felt like during this trip I was getting to know her better than I ever had. Of course, I'd been afraid of her when I first started working for her, and the ongoing time when she'd asked me to build the machine, but I didn't know her during those months. There was so much knowledge within her, and it was no surprise to me why she was the Duchess of Edenheart. She was born into the position, but it was clear that her mother had trained her well. The She-Wolf knew far more about cities and how they worked than anyone else in our party. I was grateful that I'd decided to add her to our family. I really hadn't known at the time what an asset she would be. I stared out over the wasteland and squinted into the darkness ahead of me. I had quite a few things on my mind, and I was grateful for the time alone to think about them. AB had asked me to craft him a body, and I wondered, how could I do that for him? I had a few ideas on how to do it, but I wasn't sure if any of them would work. It'd be a long time before we reached the capital, but I wanted to have it figured out by then. I could possibly find a body that I could place him into. The grotesque idea was to collect body parts from fresh graves, sew them together, and then place him within it. But I wasn't sure if I could bring myself to do that. Or I could attempt to resurrect his corpse and bring it back to life, but that was borderline necromancy, not alchemy, and I didn't know if I had it in me to pull all of that off. There were a few other options, but I'd have to test them out first before I subjected AB to any of them. I didn't want to try one out and then accidentally kill the reanimated brain. I breathed a heavy sigh, leaned in the driver's seat, and glanced behind me at the road we'd left behind. I couldn't make out any of the trees or even the sloping mountains of Granum. This place was so strange to me, and chills bubbled up on the exposed parts of my skin. I'd grown up in the plateau between two mountains, so I'd never been to a location such as this. It was like a barren wasteland compared to Edenheart or even Burskan and Granum. Though I wasn't familiar with them, those places seemed more like home than this endless emptiness. Edeny had said that the aristocrats who lived in Valestia had gone there out of necessity, but I could never imagine willingly living out in a place like this. The mountains in between Edenheart always made me feel small. But this feeling was totally different. In the middle of this flat, barren place, I felt utterly insignificant. Not that that was a new feeling, but the darkened sky pressed down on my shoulders, and the stretching dunes snuck in on me from all directions. "All right," I barked, shifted the reins in my hands, and guided the horses a little bit off the road. "I think that's enough for one night. Let's rest, boys." I hopped from the driver's seat and then lifted it to reveal storage underneath. I grabbed feed bags for each of the horses and took the time to place them over their long faces. Each beast neighed and huffed contentedly as I caressed their soft faces and patted their sides. I was tired, and more than ready to fall into bed with the rest of my women. We'd wake early and head out again to reach the mining town. I hoped that once we got there, the battle against the aristocrats would be relatively easy, and we'd be in and out of there within a day or so. I trudged back toward the caravan's door and tried not to fall over from the unfamiliar terrain. My boots sank into the sand and then shifted as soon as I attempted to take another step. It would take me a long time to get used to this sensation, and I highly doubted that I ever would. As quietly as I could, I opened the caravan's door and slipped inside. The entire first compartment was dark, except for a single candle burning on a side table, and I picked it up on my way toward the bedroom. As I moved closer, I listened to the soft sounds of my women sleeping. Ryan snored pleasantly in the distance, and every few seconds, Valerie whispered something while deep in her dreams. I rested the flickering candle down on one of the bedside tables and slowly began to undress. The light filtering in through the window from the moon was cast across the bed, and I glanced over each of their faces. Daisy slept on her back with her hands knit over her stomach. Her small, round face was serene, and her plump lips parted as if she were about to speak. Valerie laid on her side with her right arm and leg extended. The feline woman looked as if she were about to take off running off the side of the bed, and as I chuckled softly under my breath, she whispered something under her breath. Ryan laid on the edge of the bed with most of her red-tinted face obscured by her onyx-colored hair. Her taloned fingers curled once and then laid still on the mattress beside her. Edeny rested beside the imp woman with her arms and legs tucked into the fetal position. And beside her, Cleia and Cecilia cuddled closely together for warmth. There was a space right in the middle of all of them where I would lay, and it looked as if they'd made sure there was enough room for me when I finally came in. I sat down heavily on the chair in the corner and began untying my boots. I held the right one in my hands, and suddenly a sound off in the distance caught my attention. At first it sounded like the roaring of the wind, but as I listened, it sounded oddly mechanical, like a forced sound, almost like steam expelling when my machine was cooling down after an experiment. I sat in the chair with my single boot hanging from my right hand's fingers for a long time. And finally I stood quietly and crossed toward the window. I stared out through the sheer curtains and then ripped them open to stare out at the barren, desolate landscape outside. The moon was high and cast shadows over the sloping dunes, but I couldn't make out any shapes from where I stood. There was something out there. I just didn't know what it was. But I couldn't rest if there were. I carefully placed my boot back on the floor and slipped my foot into it. There'd be no sleep for me tonight, not when there was something outside the caravan lurking around in wait. In one swift movement, I grabbed my staff from the corner of the room and then exited through the bedroom door. I moved silently through the rest of the caravan and made sure to peek through each of the windows on my way to the main entrance. Once I stepped outside, the cold air bit at me, but I couldn't let that bother me. There was something out there. Something was waiting on the horizon, watching and waiting.
I stood in front of the closed caravan door and scanned the horizon for any signs of life. The noise had died down, but that just meant that whatever was out there had paused for a moment. It could be watching us from afar, and I certainly couldn't go to bed with a threat on the horizon. I circled the caravan once and scrutinized everything in the distance, but couldn't find anything. But that didn't mean that the danger had passed. It could be a wild animal, or worse, an aristocrat on their way to or from Valestia. I had no way of knowing what it was, but I had to stay vigilant. I'm not sure how long I stood outside, but after a while, I sat down on the low step into the caravan and held the staff across my knees. Even though I was tired, I kept my mind and body alert to any sounds that erupted up out of the desert around me. It easily could have been the wind that caught my attention, but I didn't want to let down my guard and go back inside the caravan in case it wasn't. We were in a completely unfamiliar environment now, and if a wild beast attacked while we were sleeping, we'd be entirely unprepared. So I stayed where I was, completely frozen on the step. A few times, I could have sworn I heard that strange mechanical sound again. But when I craned my head in the direction it came from, it immediately died down. A few times, our horses neighed and huffed. But from the sound of it, it was just the beast settling in for the night and not out of danger, as I suspected. My legs ached and my back throbbed, but I couldn't rest just yet. I didn't know how long I waited outside, but suddenly, the door I rested on opened, and I almost fell back into the dark cabin. I lifted my head and stared up into the concerned face of one of my monster women.
"Charles?"
Daisy asked, clutched her robe tighter around herself, and squinted down at me.
"What are you doing? I heard you come in earlier, but then you didn't get into bed, so I got worried. Is everything all right? I sense something is amiss."
"You feel it too?" I asked, shifted my gaze, and looked out over the desert. "I heard something, and, well, then I knew I couldn't go to bed. If something happened while all of us were resting, I wouldn't be able to forgive myself."
"How long have you been out here?"
the bear girl asked, gestured for me to scoot over, and then sat down beside me on the step.
"It's quite cold."
"I don't know how long, but I can't just go to bed right now, especially not after you basically confirmed that there's something out here with us."
"I don't think they're a danger to us,"
Daisy murmured, squinted her eyes, and then fell silent for a moment.
"But you never know, so it is better if we stayed vigilant."
"Can you tell me how many there are out there? And what they are?"
"No."
The brunette shook her head.
"They're too far away to tell what they are. But I believe there's about 5 or 6 of them. But there's something strange about them. I can hear the footfalls of 10 animals, but I can only sense about 5 living beings. What does that mean? Sounds like they're on horses, or maybe even mules. But I can't get a read on them as if they aren't alive or something. It's all bizarre. It feels as if they're bedding down for the night, but..."
"They could easily wake up and attack. They may even have someone watching us right now. I can't take a chance and go back to bed, not when our safety is at stake. I could have easily missed the sound. At first, it just sounded like the wind, but it had a strange twinge to it, so I decided to stay up and watch over all of you." The brunette nodded, leaned forward, and wrapped her robe around herself even tighter. She may have been cold, but her body heat rolled off of her as if she had a coal stove burning within her. I assumed that this trait was from the bear that we used in her experiment, and I scooted closer to her on the small step. Suddenly, the bear girl nudged me with her shoulder, and I glanced over at her.
"You should go to bed. It's been a long day, and you need your rest. I went to sleep earlier than the rest because I felt exhausted and worn out the last few days. I could stay up and take up the rest of the watch if you want."
"I can't let you do that. Not only that, but what if they attack while I'm gone?"
"Charles,"
the brunette giggled and softly tapped my shoulder with her fist.
"I'm more than certain that I can handle it all by myself. If they do attack, and I can't handle it, I could scream pretty loudly to wake the rest of you up. Now go. The bags under your eyes are getting bigger and darker by the minute. You need to rest. I can lose a few hours since I slept more than anyone else today."
"But you just said you didn't feel good." I shook my head. "No, you should..."
"No ifs, ands, or buts, mister."
The bear girl chuckled lightly, stood from the step, and gripped me by the wrists.
"Off to bed with you. I can handle myself out here, Charles. I promise. And if anything happens, I'll scream for help."
The brunette hauled me to my feet, and I collapsed forward with my arms tightly wrapped around her. The two of us stood like this for a long moment, and I allowed her beating warmth to seep deep into my skin. When I finally let go, I exhaled loudly through my nose, shook my head, and turned toward the closed door behind us. Daisy nodded with her fists pressed to her hips until I was inside, and then she closed the door for me. I didn't want to admit it, but I was exhausted. It had been a very long day, and I'd been in the driver's seat for most of it. We'd reached Granum earlier, and I'd been hit with the view of the giant granite wall surrounding it. Then we'd waited for Ascara and the rest of the soldiers to arrive. After that, we'd headed off into the night toward Valestia. I felt as if I hadn't allowed myself a lot of time to relax these days, and though my body needed it, I wanted to push on to the next big accomplishment. When I finally shuffled back into the master bedroom, the rest of my monster women were in the exact same positions from before. I slowly undressed for a second time, kicked off my boots, and then climbed in between their warm, comforting bodies. As soon as I laid my head back on the pillow, Edeni turned over and curled herself to my side along with Cleia. While I snuggled in deeper, I wrapped my arms around them and brought them a little closer. I may have been exhausted, and my body felt as if it weighed 20 tons. I still wasn't sure if I'd be able to sleep that night. I was worried about Daisy out there all alone, even though I knew I shouldn't be. The bear girl was more than capable on her own. I'd seen it with my very own eyes, but that didn't mean I was any less worried, especially if there were more of them that she couldn't sense. I laid in bed and stared at the blank, white ceiling for what seemed like hours and listened for anything off in the distance. The only thing I heard was the howling of the wind as it whipped around the corners of the caravan, and that seemed to soothe me a bit. I'd left my staff at the foot of the bed in case something did happen and we needed to rush out to help Daisy. Sleep came to me slowly, and when I finally closed my eyes, my mind was filled with strange, incomprehensible dreams of enormous beasts. Their shiny gray hooves glittered in the bright sunlight and beat against the glowing golden sand. When I lifted my head to get a better look at them, the bright rays blinded me, and I instantly squinted against the sudden and sharp pain. I couldn't make out what they were, but they stood taller than our horses, and their necks sloped down to meet their wide backs. Their hooves beat at the sand, and they reared back with loud neighs, but the sound was different. It was the same one I'd heard earlier, the strange mechanical clink of parts moving in effortless tandem. Then came the screaming release of steam, just like the one my machine made after we finished an experiment. I didn't know what they were, but from what that dream told me, we would find out soon enough.